Good morning. This is Bob reading the Decatur Herald and Review. First article I'm going to read from, Election 2016. Early vote totals run high in the state. Almost 500,000 cast ballots by mail or in person. With a little more than a week to go until Election Day, more than 6% of Illinois voters have recorded 8 million active registered voters have already cast their ballots, according to the Illinois State Board of Elections. As of Thursday morning, 485,410 Illinoisans had voted in the November 8th election, either by mail, in person, or using grace period registration, which allows people to register and cast their ballots at the same time. In the 2015 general election, about 6.6% of registered voters cast their ballots early, accounting for 13% of the overall turnout of nearly 3.7 million. In 2012, the last presidential election year, nearly 16% of active registered voters voted before Election Day, representing 22% of the nearly 5.3 million ballots cast. Jim Tenuto, a spokesman for the election board, said early voting has become increasingly popular as the state has expanded opportunities for people to cast ballots ahead of time. Voters could begin casting ballots September 29th by mail and at the office of the local election authorities. More early voting locations open across the state Monday and will remain open daily through November 7th. Given the contentious presidential race and the fact that this is the first general election which residents of Illinois's more populated counties will be able to register at their polling places on Election Day, it's hard to predict the overall turnout, Tenuto said. It just seems like with all the registrations going up, that translates to a big four turnout. The previous state record for active registered voters was a little less than 7.8 million in 2008. The year then U.S. Senator Barack Obama of Illinois won the presidency. Overall turnout that year was nearly 72%. So far this year, Rock Island County is among the top five jurisdictions for early voting, with 10.6% of the county's 98,732 active registered voters. The northwestern Illinois county is also one of the areas from which the Illinois Attorney General's office has heard complaints about voters not receiving mail-in ballots after sending in applications they received from third-party spokesman Eileen Boyle said. Advocacy groups, political parties, and other often distributes applications for mail-in ballots, which is legal, but voters who send in the application should make sure they've been received by their local election authority. The Attorney General's office said Thursday in an alert. Those wishing to vote by mail must fill out an application which their local election authority must receive by November 3rd, the Attorney General's office said. Once voters receive their ballot, they must fill out, sign, and postmark them by November 8th. They can also be hand-delivered to the local election authority by 7 p.m. on election day. The Attorney General's office and the State Elections Board encourage those who have registered or submitted a mail-in ballot to follow up with their local election authority to make sure they've been received. Contact information can be found at elections.il.gov. Those who've applied and haven't received a ballot or received one but haven't sent it in are allowed to vote in person either early or on election day. Aside from Rock Island County, early voting rates are higher than the statewide average in several downstate jurisdictions. In the city of Bloomington, 9.8% of registered voters have cast ballots, though the rate is 5.8% in the rest of McLean County. The early voting weight so far is 8.1% in Coles County and 7.3% in Macon County. The next article is on the Senate seat in Illinois at stake in debate. In a debate packed with testy exchanges, Republican U.S. Senator Mark Kirk ribbed Democratic U.S. Representative Tammy Duckworth's family history of military service, and she criticized him for previous remarks he made against the president as the candidates made one of their final pitches to voters Thursday. The Illinois Senate contest is considered one of the most important this November because it's one of a handful of races that could determine which party controls the chamber next year. Kirk, a first-term senator from Highland Park, is seen as one of the Senate's most vulnerable Republican incumbents. And Democrats considered Duckworth's success on Election Day one of the keys to reclaiming majority in the chamber. Duckworth has a comfortable lead in the most recent polls, but Kirk says the race is closer than people think. The two met for their first televised debate in an auditorium at the University of Illinois, Springfield. One of the evening's most awkward moments came after Duckworth, an Iraq war veteran, spoke about how her family has served the nation in uniform going back to the Revolution. The comments prompted Kirk to quip, I'd forgotten your parents came all of the way from Thailand to serve George Washington. Duckworth was born in Bangkok and is the first Asian American congresswoman from Illinois. The remark was greeted mostly by silence in the auditorium, and the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee immediately called the comment offensive and said Kirk should apologize. Kirk has been criticized before for statements he made during the campaign. In August, he said President Obama was acting like the drug dealer in chief. When the U.S. made $400 million payment to Iran, contingent on the return of U.S. prisoners, earlier in the debate, Duckworth cited that an example of why she thinks Kirk shouldn't be in the Senate. Kirk spokesman Kevin Ardle praised the senator's debate performance. Senator Kirk has always commended Representative Duckworth. He's called her a war hero in his commercials, and he commends her family's service, Ardle said. But that's not what this debate is about. Kirk repeatedly called Duckworth too partisan and said he worried that she will go to war with the 54 Republicans in the Senate. He emphasized his bipartisan record, while Duckworth focused her argument on pledging to improve economic opportunities for working families, saying she wants to ensure that they have a shot at the American dream. Both candidates have received high-profile endorsements in the final weeks of their campaign. Former presidential candidate Mitt Romney praised Kirk as an independent voice in the Senate and said his victory is important to help the GOP control the chamber of and keep America from going off the rails. Kirk has been a vocal critic of Donald Trump's presidential candidacy and has called for the Senate to hold hearings on Obama's pick for the Supreme Court. This month, Obama appeared as a fundraiser for Duckworth and recorded a radio ad noting how she made her way through college with the help of loans and grants and highlighted her father's job as a factory worker. Obama says in the ad, Duckworth has walked in our shoes. Affordable Care Act consumers facing fewer choices. Americans in the health insurance markets created by President Barack Obama's law called Obamacare will have less choice next year than any time since the program started. A new county-level analysis for the Associated Press has found. The analysis by AP and consulting firm Avalere Health found that about one-third of U.S. counties will have only one health marketplace insurer next year. That's more than 1,000 counties in 26 states, roughly double the number of counties in 2014. The first year of coverage through the program. Illinois consumers who buy health insurance on the marketplace created by President Barack Obama's overhaul will find less choice than ever when they pick a policy for next year. In Illinois, last time around, there were three or more marketplace insurers offering plans for 2016 in all counties. Now only one in four Illinois counties has that kind of choice. Seven counties have only one insurer. With insurance notices for 2017 in the mail, families are already facing difficult choices. Even weighing whether to stay covered. At this point, we are at a loss, said Ryan Robinson of Phoenix. We don't know what the next step is. He and his wife, Nicole, only have health plans from one insurer available next year, and the company doesn't appear to cover an expensive immune system medication for their 11-year-old daughter. Phoenix is in the market hardest hit by insurer exits, shrinking from eight carriers to one, with many other communities affected. However, the problem of dwindling choices may create even bigger political headaches than the rising premiums announced earlier this week. Largely as a result of the Affordable Care Act, the nation's uninsured rate has dropped to a historically low level, less than 9%. Another national story. Forces evict protesters from pipeline land. Police, National Guard in North Dakota break up camp, arrest 117 with one injured. This is from Cannonball, North Dakota. Law enforcement officials dressed in riot gear and firing bean bags and paper spray evicted protesters Thursday from private land in the path of the Dakota Access oil pipeline, dramatically escalating a months-long dispute over Native American rights and the project's environmental impact. In an operation that took nearly 6 hours, hundreds of armed state and local police and National Guard, some on foot, and others in trucks, military Humvees and buses pushed away past burning barricades to slowly envelope the camp. At least 117 people were arrested. No serious injuries were reported, though one man was hurt in the leg and received treatment from a medic. Among those arrested was a woman who pulled out a .38 caliber pistol and fired 3 times at officers, narrowly missing a sheriff's deputy. State Emergency Services spokesman Cecily Fong said officers did not return fire, she said. Sheriff Kyle Kirchmeier said that although police were still dealing with protesters on the perimeter, though officials earlier said they planned to turn the site over to private security. Kirchmeier said police would stay for now. "We're not leaving the area," he said. "We're just going to make sure that we maintain a presence in the area so the roadway stays open and to keep individuals from camping on private land." Opponents of the pipeline over the weekend set up camp on private land owned by Texas-based Energy Transfer Partners, which is working to complete the 1,200-mile pipeline to carry oil from western North Dakota to Illinois. The route skirts the Standing Rock Reservation, and the tribes say it could endanger water supplies and disturb cultural sites. The state of North Dakota says no sensitive cultural sites have been found in the area. The tribe has gone to court to challenge the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' decision granting permits at more than 200 water crossings. A federal judge in September denied their request to block construction, but 3 federal agencies stepped in to order construction to halt on Corps' own land around Lake Oath. That's OAHE, a wide spot of the Missouri River, while the Corps reviews its decision-making. Construction was allowed to continue on private land owned by the developer, with a goal of completion by the end of the year. Thursday's operation to push out the protesters began a day after they had refused to leave voluntarily. Law enforcement repeatedly asked protesters to retreat, at one point using a high-pitched whistle that was intended to control and disperse protesters. The camp cleared on Thursday is located just to the north of a more permanent and larger encampment on federally owned land that has been the main staging area for hundreds of protesters, including Native Americans from across North America, environmentalists, and some celebrities. Many protesters openly defied the officers, while others took part in prayer circles and burned sage. Enough people were arrested that Morton County Sheriff spokesman woman Donald Hushka said the county needed additional jails to house them. She said those charged with felonies would be held pending court appearance. Cody Hall, a spokesman for the protesters, vowed a new camp would be built elsewhere in the pipeline's path, but on federal land. It's going to take a lot to move them from here, he said. Authorities said protesters set fire to four large pieces of construction equipment. At least two cars were also burned. Aaron Johnson, 50, a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux in South Dakota, said he and other protesters weren't happy with the day's outcome. I came here for peace and prayer, he said. When somebody uses something on fire, that's not peace and prayer. Next article, Servants of Mercy. Besides the dying, nuns stand vigil each evening. Esperanza Calderon stared at Sister Maria Socorro with half-closed eyes. The nun hunched over her as she reclined in a living room chair, wrapped in a blanket and slowly but inexorably dying. As a 70-year-old woman's sister clasped her hand, Socorro held a book open across her palms. Together, the three women prayed. Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof, the woman followed along in Spanish, her voice fragile. But one word from you would be enough to heal me. A sister with the Servants of Mary, Socorro has spent many of her nights and dark early mornings in the home of the dying. Each night, a volunteer picks her up about 7 p.m. and drives her to the designated tiny house just a few miles from the South Los Angeles convent. The congregation was founded in Spain in 1851 as nurses. They worked during cholera epidemics and wars, and later in Mexico during revolutions. Now more than 2,000 sisters work in 128 convents throughout Europe, Africa, Asia, and Americas. The sisters prefer to minister in patients' homes, but also work in hospices, orphanages, and hospitals, and when needed, they take care of their own. Many of the patients are immigrants, others born and bred in Los Angeles. Some pray to another god or to none at all. To the sisters, it doesn't matter. A tumor embedded itself in Calderon's brain. 3 years ago, doctors told her she had 6 months to live. She had a stroke about 2 years later. She can't walk. Calderon's sister does almost everything for her until late in the evening when the nun arrives. The woman's first name, Esperanza, means hope in Spanish. Socorro means help. The bed is the cross, said the 46-year-old nun, who is also a trained nursing assistant. Christ is the patient. Before getting Calderon to bed, Socorro gives her communion. She reaches into a bag and pulls out a white handkerchief embroidered with the image of a red cross, a chalice, wheat, and grapes, signs of the Eucharist. She unwraps the cloth and opens the small golden box it encases, reaching for the host. Esperanza, she calls. Calderon, who lifts her mouth toward the wafer in the sister's hand and intones the body of Christ. Almost 30 years ago, a teenage Maria Roman went to a retreat hoping to persuade her to little sister Sophia not to become a nun. Sophia wanted to explore her options for a religious vocation, and Maria, then 18, wouldn't have it. You know, you can never go out if you become a nun, Maria warned her. She begged her older sister to go with her to the woman's retreat in their native city of Pueblo, Mexico. It was the only way their father would let Sophia go. Socorro said that he couldn't bear watching her sister cry, so she said yes. More than 100 girls attended the retreat, but there wasn't enough food for all of them. They slept crammed together as in the barracks. And now back to the day for her. The sun hasn't peeked over the horizon when she reaches the front stoop at the convent just after 5 a.m. Socorro greets her sisters, then stops by the chapel to pray the rosary. She helps to prepare breakfast and cleans up around the house, finally crawling into bed around noon. At night, she'll stand vigil again. Now, I want to go to the opinion page on an important topic right now that everybody is listening to, the Chicago Cubs. Cubs deliver bliss to eternal fans. Like manna from heaven, a small bit of much-needed joy fell upon Chicago Saturday night as the Cubs' security trip to the World Series for the first time since 1945. I wasn't watching the game but knew the moment they won because the pure bliss emanated from Wrigley Field many miles out to me as my neighbors burst from their homes onto the streets and shrieking and hooting. Minutes later, the sky was awash in fireworks and people were driving down the street, honking their horns in jubilation. The collective delight offered a refreshing pause for Chicagoans distressed over the nation's election year anxiety and the gun violence pounding the city's lowest income residents. On Saturday night, people of all backgrounds, races, and income levels were in the street singing together, hugging and crying. There were quite a lot of bittersweet tours. In fact, the Cubs' win brought wistfulness and those lucky enough to witness the October miracle. Yahoo Sports' Kevin Kadak picked right up on it, writing, the thing that struck you were the tears. The tears were so many things. They were for the achievement, of course, but for the fans, the tears were also for so many other things. It was for relatives no longer with us. One man waved a poster board sign that said, "Best fan on heaven, Mom," with a picture of a woman wearing a Cubs hat in a hospital bed. "I wish my dad was alive," trended on Facebook, because so many people were posting that phrase in relation to the Cubs. It was for people no longer near us too. Fans texted and called others from the stands when they could catch a signal. When the last time so many sons and daughters called their mothers and fathers that late on a Saturday night. "'Tis this till death do we part affair between Cub fans and their beloved team is viscerally real to many people." In his 2014 book, A Nice Little Place on the North Side, Wrigley Field at 100, the Washington Post columnist and Cubs fan George Will wrote, "The gushing is never worse than when Cub fans get around Wrigley Field, if it is they thinking can be said into such talk, a little foretaste, you guessed it, the hereafter." Fans of the underdogging teams like the Cubs and Cleveland Indians, who better than have 174 years, I'm not going to be able to finish that opinion piece, but you get the idea of what they're saying. This is Bob signing out on part one, October 28th, 2016, Decatur Herald.